I'm Chris Shannon, the Master's Coach at Zalak Rowing, and you are listening to the Steady State Podcast. Sit ready.
Hey, I'm Tara Morgan. I live on Vashon Island in Washington, founded Seize the Oar in 2013, and am fanatic about coaching Learn to Row. Plus, I believe the pair is the best boat.
And I'm Rachel Friedman. I live in Washington, D.C., and the owner of RowSource, the founder of the Alliance of Women Rowing Coaches, and I can't row a single in a straight line. Between us, we have nearly 40 years of rowing, coaching, and coxing experience.
Here at Steady State Podcast, we are fascinated by backstories, the real-life experiences on and off the water that make people the rowers, coaches, and coxswains they are today. From indoor rowing to flatwater masters to coastal and ocean adventurers, we celebrate you, who represent the global humanity of our sport. Together, we disrupt and expand the narrative about rowing culture.
If you're a first-time listener, welcome. If you're coming back for another episode, thanks so much for being here. Steady State Podcast is sponsored in part by Indy5 Investors. We're also really excited to announce our newest sponsor, Live to Row Studios, where rowing is for everybody. And expert coaches lead live indoor rowing classes and training camps every day of the week. Get in touch with a coach for your free introductory session at live2rowstudios.com. Thanks also to our patrons for your support.
As part of our semi-regular Club Spotlight series and in the lead-up to San Diego Crew Classic, we're headed to California to get to know Zalak, the oldest women's rowing club in the world. Established in 1892, Zalak has 400 members and provides rowing programs and social opportunities. Through the years, Zalak programs have produced U.S. national team members, Olympians, top college rowers, regional racers, and thousands of recreational rowers. The heart of Zalak's mission is to support all women and girls through the sport of rowing. Today, we're talking with Zalak Masters head coach Chris Shannon, athletic chair Tanya Ferguson, and recent Learn to Row grad Lee Copson.
Hello, I'm Chris Shannon. I'm a master's coach at Zalak Rowing Club. I also row a single when I have the time. Been involved at Zalak now for 10 years and a member for about 15.
My name is Lee Copson. I'm a member at Zalak Rowing Club in San Diego. I've been a member since I was a junior, since a kid, but I just got into rowing as an adult. Oh, I'm a new learner to row too.
Hi, I'm Tanya Ferguson. I am a master's rower at Zalak Rowing Club in San Diego. I have been at Zalak since 2017, and I am also the athletic chair.
Thanks so much for being with us today. You know, we love doing club spotlights here on Steady State Podcast. We've talked to people in Halifax, Nova Scotia. We've talked to Nassau Rowing Club in the Bahamas. And now we're here talking with Zalak. So on a scale of 1 to 10, how has your past rowing week been? Chris?
Ooh, busy because we just came. We traveled to Arizona over the weekend. We got a new boat in the boathouse. We had to get the trailer all ready to go. Drove to Tempe, 6-hour drive, raced, turned around, drove home. So it's been a little busy.
This past week has been a big old zero for me for rowing. Unfortunately, a couple weeks ago, I had some unplanned surgery. And so I spent a nice little stay in the hospital and I've been recovering for the last couple weeks. It was really disappointing because I was supposed to go to that regatta that Chris just referenced, and I wasn't able to go. So my heart was all with my teammates. So on a 1 to 10 scale, for rowing and for like other stuff. I mean, I'm healing, so that's great, but it was kind of like a one. It's pretty crummy awesome. That way.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that. What, remind us which regatta was this in Tempe?
Desert Sprints.
Desert Sprints. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was excited because it was going to be my first, I've been rowing for about 8 months and it was going to be my first away regatta. You know, I had my 15 bags packed. I was ready.
All the Ooh. Different options.
That's right.
Got to be ready for everything. And then your 10th regatta, there's like a bag, like a
right.
bag.
Right?
You're
Maybe
like,
a backpack.
Do I trow in my sneakers and the water bottle? It's good. Tanya, what about you?
I'd say it was about a 9. I went to Desert Sprints, came home with some new jewelry, some nice gold medals, and Slack overall did fantastic. I think it was a really great event. Chris did a great job managing it, of course, but it's been a busy week overall, but very exciting from the rowing side.
Very fun. Is that the first regatta of the year?
Yeah. So this is kind of kicking off sprint season for us. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, I always think about this. So here in DC, we don't even get on the water until the end of March, and our first sprint race isn't until June. So we've got a lot of catching up to do when we end up at Masters Nationals or larger regional events, you know?
Yeah. And I'll speak for the Upper West Coast, Northwest folks who want to go to San Diego Crew Classic. Like, we have to plan ahead, you know, months in advance in order to even be ready, because we also have darkness to deal with. And a lot of the clubs don't row in the dark.
Okay, so to help our listeners get to know our guests, we put you through a lightning round of questions we call the hot seat. Are you ready?
Yes. We'll see. There might be a lot of in this, but yeah.
Right. Sure. So everyone will answer each question. So let's go ahead and do it in this order. Chris will answer, Tanya, and then Lee.
Port or starboard?
Starboard.
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 A sweep or skull?
Skull.
Definitely sweep.
Skull.
Bow seat, stroke seat, or engine room?
How about 7 seat?
I kind of move around, but lately I've been bow.
Yeah, I'm kind of that born to bow. Bow wow.
A head race or sprint race?
Oh, sprint.
Definitely head race.
I don't know yet.
Awesome. Good answer. Uni suit or tank and trowel?
Tank and trowel.
Tank and trowel for sure.
Oh, that would be a tank and trowel.
Favorite coxswain command to give or receive?
Way enough.
Sit up tall.
Gosh, there's just so much flowing through my head. Oh boy. I'll just say way enough.
You'd be surprised. A lot of people say way enough.
Considering how much we all love rowing, a lot of people want to stop rowing.
Rachel and I sometimes interject our favorite, and sometimes my favorite is into lengthen. I love the lengthen after a high 20. Like, that's precious to me. Favorite place to row?
One of my favorite regattas to take the team was Concordia, Canada. We did that a couple of years ago.
Ahead of the Charles.
I've only been in San Diego Bay. But I can say that when I first started rowing, we would just go out from the club and back, you know, out and back. And I was like, wow, this bay is so much smaller than I thought it was. And then one day somebody said, oh, we're going under the bridges today. I'm like, oh my gosh, there's bridges and there's more water? Through my entire life. And that was just like such a, oh my, that's the big girl pond over there. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
That's so exciting.
Yeah. When I used to teach Learn to Row, I remember my students would be so enamored with the fact that they were seeing where they probably lived for years from this different perspective. They were just like, wait a second, that's that street? Oh, wow.
Okay. What else do we have here with our hot seat? Best piece of rowing advice you've ever received?
Keep it simple, probably.
And we'll keep it simple. You don't even have to elaborate if you want to. Just keep it simple.
I love that. Tanya.
I would say relax and smile. I think that all comes together and then it just helps with everything.
Yeah. I always talk to my rowers about just how many muscles you have in your face and you don't need to be using them. So please shut them off.
Lee.
I think one of the things that Coach Chris said that's always stuck in my mind is about sitting up with your shoulders back and that you're like a princess at the top of a staircase. And just that dignity and beauty helps keep the shoulders and the chest up. That visual to me has always stuck with me.
I have a coach who used to say, show off your pearls. So same idea.
Show off your pearls.
Still think about that today.
And the last one is coffee before or after a row?
I don't drink coffee. However, I do drink Diet Coke.
Both and Lee do to Diet DCs. Coke first thing in the morning.
I never knew, Chris. I never knew.
Whoa. Secrets revealed.
My container is tea. I'll have tea when I'm coaching, but I don't drink coffee, so it's Diet Coke for caffeine.
Tanya, any tricks?
We wake up so early in the morning, I don't have time to make coffee, but I have a huge hankering for it right after. So I run straight home and hope the coffee pot is on.
Yeah, I used to row at 5:30 in the morning, and it just was like, you were lucky if you grabbed a banana on the way out the door, you know. One of the things we love to know about is what was happening in your life when rowing came into it. So Coach Chris, what attracted you to the sport? How did it find you? And why did you stay around?
I was in college. I did not row in college, but I was in my last quarter at UC San Diego. Started working for a place called the Mission Bay Aquatic Center. It's a waterfront facility that has skiing and sailing and rowing. But I had started working there as a sailing instructor. And I was in the break room. And a rowing coach spotted me and said, you need to learn to row. I said, what the hell? You know, I'm looking at this kind of scrawny old guy who just came off the water. I'm thinking, oh, who's the hell this guy? He convinced me to come down the next day. He had one of his athletes teach me how to scull. That was my one and only lesson in sculling, and flipped for many months, every day. That same coach eventually put me on. At that time, we had a San Diego police crew. So I rowed with the police department at the time. They taught me how to swim row. Then I ended up rowing with his collegiate team because he needed to fill the varsity boat. And then after that, I basically hopped on to the club program. And I've been a club rower my entire career, and fell in love with sculling because of the challenge that, you know, it's only you trying to master this darn boat and not flip. And just love that, you know, the work that I put into my training would show up in the sculling. However, I get very lonely practicing by myself. So therefore, the team was great because I could go ahead and see my buddies in the morning and learn how, you know, get better as a sweep rower. And then in the afternoon, after my day of work, I'd go back and scull by myself and get all my frustrations out from the day and just slam the blades in the water and do my sculling workout. You know, I just enjoyed the challenge of the individual sport because I'd never done that, and the team, you know, how to be a good team player. And this has truly been my only sport that I've done.
And when did you transition to coaching?
One of the gals on my sweep team, once I got to the club, she was in charge of the whole facility. And because she saw my tenacity, I think, with the sculling, the fact that I kept going out there regardless of the flipping, she said, well, by trial and error, you might have learned something. I started teaching classes at the Aquatic Center for her. And then with my club team, as I taught classes, I realized all these rowers had nowhere to go, or the women would go to SLAC. And at the time, San Diego Rowing Club was only men. And so the men would go one side, the women would go to another side. And I'm over there saying, but my club, my team needs more women. So I'm going to create a recreational program from the people learning from the classes I was teaching, and create just a recreational program. If you want to race, you have to split out to one of the different teams. But if you want to just learn to row and improve your technique, then that's what this group was. And so I did that for many years and then just kind of branched on. But it was from trying to build my own team and get more rowers on my own team.
Slightly selfish in nature, but yes.
Not slightly. It was selfish.
Absolutely.
When did you start coaching at SLAC, or when did you get involved there?
So I got involved as a social member. So SLAC being unique in the sense that there's a social side, there's a competitive side. You know, my team competed against SLAC often and really didn't have that much desire to go ahead and row with them. My team was very competitive and we basically held our own very well at that time. You know, could we do it now with the Masters? Probably not. But at that time, it was, you know, women weren't rowing much. And so I never really wanted to row for SLAC, but I lived with Patty Wyatt. She's the gal who created the Crew Classic. And I had so much respect for her. She was a member of SLAC. And I thought, you know, as I lived with her for over so many years, everything that she touched was good. So I said, I better get myself a member at SLAC. So that's how I joined SLAC, is through kind of her influence. And then I retired. I'd done some camps or clinics, they were called clinics back then, over at SLAC with some of the gals that were from my recreational program that had moved on, wanted to race, and they ended up going to SLAC. And so they had asked me to do some clinics. I had a little bit of a name over there. When I retired from my professional job, they're just like, we need you over here, and when can you start? And so I basically retired from my real job and then went next Monday, started at SLAC.
Nice. I'm glad that you mentioned the social side. I definitely want to talk about that because I personally am not very familiar with that. I know that it exists, but I've never been a part of a social side of a club like that. But Lee, you said that you've been a member of LAC since you were a teenager. So I'm assuming you came in also on the social side. How did you know that that was something you wanted to do?
So I was brought in by a friend in high school. Her older sister rode for SLAC, and I was really into cheerleading in high school. So in theory, I probably didn't have time for SLAC, but you didn't go in back then, back in the 1900s, you didn't go in as just a social or a rower. I just think that all the other girls rode. I think that I just had my other sport that I was into. And so I remember learning on a barge. I remember a really big boat that we learned on. and after that, I just only took part in social activities.
And then you came into rowing officially in 2023.
Correct.
So what was the impetus to get on the water and start rowing?
So my daughter went off to college. And one of those,
the empty nester. Yes.
Yeah. Single mom. I'm not dating. Can't run anymore.
Can't cheerlead. No
cheerleading. Cheerlead. No more backflip for me, sister. So, you know, what am I going to do with my time? Where do I want to spend my precious time? I've always, you know, you think about how many dues I've paid since I was a teenager, right? And I think in my heart, I always knew that SLAC would be a place for me. I've always believed in its camaraderie and sisterhood. And so all those years that I was away and paying dues and raising a child, there wasn't a time that I ever questioned quitting, because I believe in SLAC and how it started with four teenage girls, you know, and now look at it. So I've always admired the organization, and it was time to try something new, and waking up at 3:45 in the morning is definitely something new.
It takes not only having to wake up that early, but having to arrive, be social, and communicate and move your body in a coordinated fashion, and all the things.
I'm sure you guys agree, but there's something that happens basically the moment I arrive at the boathouse, where just the brain is on, I'm ready to go. You know, the sun hasn't even come up, but because I'm there, my body and brain just say, time to go. Now, there are plenty of people who still are not functioning once they arrive at the boathouse, and they have zero interest in talking to anybody.
Yeah, you can't take it personally. It's just, no. Everybody's got their system. All right, Tanya, so you also learned to row at SLAC. And so what happened in your life to get you there?
Rowing is very new for me. I've been a soccer player my entire career, starting from age 4 through college and beyond. As an adult, I continued to play and played like I was still in college. And basically, I ruptured my Achilles. So that was eye-opening. I kind of was like, well, maybe this soccer thing's done. So as I went through rehab for my foot, I also got a new job down in San Diego. So I was kind of like, I need to do something. I've always been competitive and I needed something. And I lived very close to SLAC. And so I would walk by and I'm like, maybe I just need to try this thing out. So I did a learn to row and was hooked since then. It's actually been very good for my Achilles in terms of kind of stretching it out and getting it stronger again. So all good. And now my back would probably dispute that, but.
Right. Right. It's not one thing, you know, it's another.
Chiropractors are amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, chiropractors are amazing. Yeah, I know they transition from their primary sport as an adult. You know, they may have been runners their whole life or cyclists their whole life. I don't really meet a lot of people who take learn to row to cross train for their other sport. Like, it's you're in or you're out. Like, there's no just like a taste of rowing.
Right.
Steady State Podcast is sponsored in part by Breakwater Realty Group. Daydreaming of new lakes, rivers, and coastlines to row and play on? Consider a home in Maine. The Breakwater Realty Group, brokered by eXp Realty, can help you find your home away from home or relocate to a new primary home with ease. Connect with the team by visiting breakwaterrealtygroup.com and scheduling an obligation-free buying consultation. Maine, it's the way life should be.
On the last episode, part two of our special series on heart attacks and emergency preparedness, Sue Hooten talked with us about being a member of the first U.S. Women's Olympic team and her long career as a master's rower. She has a lifetime of rowing memories, including the day in 2018 when her husband, former national team and Vesper Boat Club coach John Hooten, did not survive a medical emergency on the water while training in his single. He was out with his training partner, without a coach, and like most rowers, was not wearing a PFD. The legacy he left behind was about fun and innovation in sport, and we know he's very much missed. If you missed it or any of our episodes, listen at steadystatenetwork.com/podcast or on your favorite podcast app. And while you're there, could you leave us a review? When you do, it helps our podcast get noticed and reach more ears. In two, we're back with Tanya Ferguson, Lee Copson, and Coach Chris Shannon from Slack. That's one, two. Okay, so let's get into Slack. So Chris, can you tell us about Slack, how it started, and what is so special about this club?
It was started in 1892 by three sisters and a buddy. They saw rowing on San Diego Bay. They wanted to try it. And they were told they couldn't because they were women. And they convinced their father, who was a member, I believe, of San Diego Rowing Club, who was across the bay. They were in Coronado. San Diego Rowing Club at that time was on San Diego Bay. Their father was able to get a shell from them from San Diego Rowing Club. And so the four of these guys would go out in a rowing shell and row around on San Diego Bay. They decided to go ahead and let's create an organization, which they, you know, did. And they, one of the sisters was kind of probably the one bossy one, headed it up. I should say that Zlack stands for all the names of the ladies. So Zulette, Lena, Agnes, and Caroline. Lena is the one who is kind of our Commodore, organizational lifetime Commodore. So there will be no other Commodores except for her. So she was the one who, you know, led it all up. They got the barge first in, I think, 1901. And then 1902 was the second barge. These were 6-person barges. There might have been more. Nope, that had been 12-person barges. But you had to put them in by davits. So you did not carry them. Our original clubhouse that we have now is the original boathouse. And it had rails that you'd roll the boat out onto the dock from the davits, drop it in. So there was no carrying of boats or whining that it's digging into my shoulder. Boom. And this was not, these things were beasts.
I'm sure.
Beasts.
Yeah.
And so the members at the time would row these things. And at the time, Mission Bay, where the Crew Classic is now, was basically a mud flat. It hadn't really been dredged out. And so they would fill the barge. You know, imagine it's not a rowing barge how a lot of them are now. It's a, you know, it's more of a big rowing dory is what they were more similar to. And they would put all their picnic stuff in there and go row from wind in and, oh, we'll go over to the mud flats over here and, you know, hop on off the island and have some fun and picnic there. And eventually toward the end of the day, row themselves back and get their boat back in their boathouse. So it was all a bunch of friends and whatnot. What they've done with the club, which was very unique and one of the things I think makes Slack really special, is even to this day, as you become a member of Slack, you are put into what's called a crew. And what these crews are kind of generational groups of women. Lee and I are in the same crew. Tanya is in the next crew that's after us. It's really a great idea in the sense that A, you have kind of a common bond because you're kind of going through life experiences all at the same time. With Lee, you know, she's a junior, so she's out there having fun and everything like that, but becomes a mom. And she has just a social network that, you know, like our crew right now, you know, we're dealing with grandbabies, aging parents and stuff like that. Oh, I need help, you know, for assisted living. You know, you got all these women you can go ahead and tap in very quickly and say, oh, did you in-home care, you know, resident care and stuff like that. It's fabulous in that sense and how you just kind of go through life and progress. And so even though I've only been a member of Slack for like 15 years, I know some of the ladies for quite some time through Patty Wyatt and some of my old teammates were members there.
How do the crews work? When does a new one begin? Is there a schedule or?
Not a schedule. They try to look at the size of the crews as they're forming. You know, Tanya, you might be able to answer this better, but I think typically when they get to about like 70, people.
Yeah.
Then they create it.
So okay. these are when new people join the club, and as a group joins and it expands, let's say you have two or three Learn to Rows back to back. And
So what it's kind of two different social groups. You have your rowing social group, and that's your Learn to Row group. You know, you're going through your novice and everything like that. But the social side, it's basically based on age. And so Tanya, being a little bit younger than Lee and I, is in a different crew. So as you become a social member of it, then you get into these other buckets. And so you actually have a lot of abilities to, you know, have touches with many of the members that you wouldn't necessarily do. From the rowing, you have cross crews. And from the actual social side, you have it within your kind of age groups and stuff like that.
This is brilliant. Do you know if other clubs do this?
I have not have heard of any.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
No.
I think this is a shame, actually. I think that more clubs should understand what you're doing and the benefit of it.
It seems like we do this by accident in our clubs. Like, I was part of Conabear, which happened to be an all-women's crew started in the 80s with Eleanor McIlvain and Sarah Lopez. So I can feel what you're talking about. I feel the feeling of Slack because we had a very strong bond. We had a very strong level of integrity. We were pretty insular in terms of our relationship to other crews. I mean, we were sort of protected because we needed to have that trust and integrity, but we did go through life events together. I mean, we went through everything, cancer, infertility, babies, empty nesting, crappy teenagers. You know, we've gone through the whole, run the whole gamut, you know, elder care, of course. But it sounds like Slack has been committed to that as a more organized thing from the very beginning. I was going through some stuff when I was in my club about 10 years ago, and I just remember the feeling of the gathering, you know, the feeling of the people coming around you and holding you up. And then you go out and you have a great row, or you have a shitty row or whatever. But off the water, there's still this like moving body of people who are supporting you. I miss that a lot, actually. I think that was really one of my favorite parts about my club. But so good on you. And as they pass leadership along, is there a way that sort of the zhuzh of Slack, Tanya, maybe you have a better story about how did you learn what Slack was, like what you were getting into?
That's a good question. That's kind of why I decided to take on this athletic chair position. Not that I wanted all this extra work, but it was really to get to understand the inner workings of the club, because I was heavily involved with the rowing. I took on little tasks like treasurer for the rowing group, but I wanted to learn more about everything else that was going on. And so this was a good way for me to kind of understand not only the history, but a lot of these women have been at Slack for a long time. So for me to learn the history from them. A lot of the older crew members were juniors at one time. So like to learn their history has also been fun for me. So I think being on the board side of it has also added a lot of value for me as a member.
So if I were to join tomorrow and I don't know anything about Slack, how are your new members introduced to your club and welcome to the club?
We have a lot of social events. So even if you are not interested in waking up very, very early in the morning to row, a lot of times what happens with the Learn to Rows is we start them off at reasonable times, daylight and all that stuff. And then when you actually sit them down at graduation, they're like, ooh, really? You start that early? But they still loved the people that were there or loved the concept of Slack. So then we kind of just start bringing them into social activities. And again, as Chris said, it's kind of based on age or what's going on in your life. So we kind of pair them up with what crew makes sense. And then trying to get them into the fold and kind of meeting more people. And then there's a process that it's voted on by the crew that, yes, we think this person would be a valuable member to Slack and our crew. And then you just become a member. It's probably a few month to 6 month process, I would say, from the time of introduction to when you actually become an official member. But that doesn't preclude you from coming to social events and helping out and that kind of stuff.
So can you tell us about Slack membership and what kind of programs are offered?
The pandemic obviously hurt us along with probably a lot of clubs. So we're definitely starting to see the recovery there. So we have between 50 and 60 rowers active. We range from early 20s all the way to 80. So we just had a rower at the Desert Sprints who won a medal. It was 80 years old. She's amazing. So we have offerings for every level in terms of there are some people who just want to go out and have fun and cruise along the bay. There are other people that want to train hard and are more competitive. So we have programs to kind of meet everybody's needs.
And how often do you offer Learn to Row? Is that just in the summertime or is it year round?
No, we can do it year round. So we don't do it every month, but I would say we offer 6 to 8 throughout the year, heavier in the summer. But we find that the people that stick with it through the winter are people who actually stick with it, because for San Diego, they survived our harsh weather. So.
Yeah, the parallel here is if you come into an erg-based learn to row and stick with it through the winter,
yeah,
you're probably going to stick with it. So I have a question for Lee. For those of us who haven't been out to San Diego, could you describe that area, the bay, and where you row?
The bay is rather large. We call it the pond where our clubhouse is, surrounded by lots of condos with a boardwalk in front. There's hotels along the bay. There's a lot of boat docks.
And you guys are a beach launch, is that right?
Mm-hmm. Well, we have a beach launch here at Vashon Crew, and I think it's always funny to see our beach launch team go to a dock-based regatta. You know, they're like, I don't know how to do this. Okay, so this episode is part of our lead up to the mega event in San Diego, the San Diego Crew Classic, founded in 1973 by Patricia Stose Wyatt, who was a ZLAC member, along with Joe Jessup, who was a San Diego Rowing Club member. Last year, Steady State Network, we had a podcast episode with Bobby Smith and Megan Calmo, who are executive and assistant directors of the event. And, you know, over the years, I've been to the San Diego Crew Classic at least 3 times now. And when I would go, it was an 8s only event. It was 2K. And I know there's been some massaging of that in the most recent years, especially coming out of COVID. But it's a powerhouse event. It's a destination regatta. For me, it was a great opportunity to get out of the yuck of the Pacific Northwest darkness and come down and see some sun and put my feet in the sand. And it's just an early season test, really, of the college powerhouses and all of our masters as well. So we know how that event started, but we want to talk to you about the ZLAC connection to that event and what that is today.
I'll talk to you a little bit about it since I've been running the longest. Yeah, I've done almost any aspect of that regatta, as well as living with the woman who created it. So knowing what her original intention is versus how it kind of morphed until where it is today. Because Patty White was a member of ZLAC, ZLAC was always very integral into it. They weren't necessarily the leaders. You know, it was Mrs. White, Patty White had many, many connections, and it took a village to start that regatta. As you know, she had construction contacts, people who had no rowing experience, you know, rowing background at all, but she needed, you know, poles built to get the finish line. She was a member of San Diego Yacht Club, so tapped into many of her people. So ZLAC always supported the whole idea of Crew Classic and have been, there was a team from the finish line there of probably 5 women from ZLAC who did it until the fact they finally got rid of the old thumb stopwatches and went digitally. So that took that whole crew that did it for probably 20 years at least. As a crew, you know, doing it. And the finish line officials knew that, oh, we don't need to worry about these guys because they just knew how to do it, you know, type thing. The stake boat holders were originally all the ZLAC girls. And so ZLAC has been involved in the sense of being either part of the board members or just part of the land-based crew, water-based crew, as well as Mission Bay Aquatic Center. Actually, they had more of the water-based skills because all of those people knew how to drive the launches, were the security, and not security, but emergency people, versus the ZLAC gals were more of the land-based stuff. Whether it was the regatta stuff, or then when the brunch came in, that was all driven by the ZLAC side. It's a social event. That is one thing ZLAC does fabulously. We are very good at, we like parties.
Yes, I've been to the ZLAC event at San Diego. It's something. It's awesome.
Yeah. And so now we have a couple of gals who are still members of the board. We have our own, you know, alumni tent, which is where most of our members end up going. San Diego Crew Classic is not an easy race to do. It's not, you know, one for the weak-hearted. And so typically we'll just have 1 or 2 boats out from the master side. The juniors will have 1 or 2 boats as well. for some reason, we end up with the trophies, taking care of the trophies for the Crew Classic for a number of years. And it's just fun to see the gal who might be in charge of the trophies for the Crew Classic then reach out and say, okay, these are all coming in. I'm getting hordes of trophies and they're all in bad shape. I need help. And just to see those LAC ladies just kind of pile into the tent and just, you'll just see them just chit-chattering like little, you know, little birds back and forth as they're rubbing and getting all the trophies.
All ashamed. This is a really neat way to be involved with the event, and to have all these decades now of involvement is pretty special.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we want to find out what's next for you in your spring season. Like, what's coming up? What are you looking forward to this season? Tanya, let's start with you.
Well, so I am rowing in Crew Classic, so I'm pretty excited about that. Then looking forward to head races, because that's what I enjoy to do.
You just so, jump ahead.
Exactly.
Yeah. Just start prepping for the Charles. Like, yeah.
Exactly. My tenure for athletic chair will be coming up in the fall. So finding my replacement there will be pretty important. So we have a good transition, but other than that, yeah, just focusing on maintaining and continuing to improve in rowing, because I feel like that's all I ever do. So is trying to improve.
Yeah, lifelong effort.
Yeah, exactly.
Lee, I know you're in recovery, but have you got your sights set on getting back in the boat and into some racing this year?
I do. I'm going to be back March 1st. I can hardly wait. I miss the water. You know, when you don't have something for a while, you realize what you really miss from it. And I really miss those mornings, like just sitting out there in the boat, waiting for everybody to get kind of lined up in the morning. And you can hear the ocean crashing across the bay and the birds, and all the lights are off, and you kind of feel like you're just undercover out there. It's just great. So I really, really miss that a ton. I mean, I'm still at that point where I'm just kind of like a kid in a candy shop, like everything just, I can walk around the boathouse and just be like, oh my gosh, you know? And so just even getting out in the boat and making even a decent catch, I'd love to just try to keep doing that. I know you always keep learning with this sport, and I don't know about races. We'll see what's ahead, but I'm just enjoying being out there.
And hang on to that feeling, really. It can be really easy to get bogged down in it over the years, right? The longer you row, the more you want to perfect everything. Tara and I have been talking a lot about recently is enjoying rowing for the sake of rowing. And if you take one crappy stroke, take a breather and move on to the next one. And just keeping your mind open and enjoying it. So
it's what's allowing Rachel and I to delve into coastal rowing this year, which is really letting go of, and you guys know coastal rowing because you're basically doing it. And especially if you're in that one lane at San Diego Classic, you're definitely doing coastal rowing, which I've been in that lane. It's no fun. but hey, man, we came in hot. So it was awesome. Yeah, because we were really used to rowing on Lake Washington, which can be, you know, crazy, crazy. Anyway, but yeah, so we're allowing ourselves to let go of some of the perfection around flat water and flat water rowing and allow ourselves to miss some strokes. And so it'll be kind of an interesting experience. Okay, Chris, what are you looking forward to? What's going on for you this season?
So after Crew Classic, we have a little bit of a lull. Because I've been involved with the sport in Mission Bay my entire rowing career, you know, there's so many regattas. The repeat regattas, and I would want to support them, but do I need to continue to do the Long Beach Christmas regatta personally? You know, I've been doing it for 40 years. So I always try to encourage everybody, you look on Regatta Central or anywhere else, you're hopping on a website for a club, they have their own regatta that's not going through Regatta Central or something like that. You see something that looks interested, let's talk about it. Let's see if there's a new place for us to go. So I always like trying to go into different areas and seeing, what's this body of water like or whatever. So that's how we ended up in Canada a couple of years ago, which I thought was really a great event to go to.
Cascadia Regatta is one of the best regattas. Absolutely.
Guys, easy to work with. Yeah, I loved it. Yep.
Yeah.
Because the team is big enough that if some people are interested, there's a regatta up in Oakland. You know, there might be a small group that wants to do that and maybe not enough to get the whole trailer up there. And so I'll help them, you know, get equipment and stuff like that. Will a coach go with them? If they want it, then you will send one of the coaches up there. But if not, they'll go just on their own. So that one's kind of sitting out there. There's a couple other ones that are kind of in that same type of, you know, space. What do we want to do? as a whole squad, whole team, the next one we'll do will be regionals down in Chula Vista in June, you know, where we can get the novices. We call it the competitive group, which is our JV, as well as our varsity, our performance group. We have a lot of mixing in between. Novices get to look at, you know, the more experienced people and learn from them. So that's always, in my opinion, a good thing.
Sounds like a great year. And you guys usually go to the Charles?
Yep. We typically, we haven't sent a 8 in quite some time. So usually a 4. We have a bid this year for a double, Masters double. So that will be fun to work with them. Those ladies, sorry, you had made a thing about, oh, after Crew Classic, start training for HOC. That's exactly what the double did last year. So they were able to get enough speed that they got into the, got their bid. So now they're just like, and they're talking to me already. Can we start getting back in the double? No, you have to wait another month.
Yeah, hold your horses there.
I have something silly that I'm looking forward to.
What's that?
Okay, so in the summertime, we take a couple boats out and it's an evening and it's all around the moon, the full moon. Last year I took part in it and it was so fun. I was able to row with some of the better rowers and I got to know them a little bit because it's just a really relaxed time. We go out onto the bay before sunset and kind of cruise around a little bit and you get to talk to the people who are in your boat, which was super because I got to mix as a novice. I got to mix with rowers like Tanya. And so I don't usually have that opportunity. And then we all howl with the moon and we have people along the sides of the road that are family members of Slack. It's kind of it's just like a really, really fun, relaxing, awesome thing that I just have to say, that's coach. I like totally appreciate that. That was so much fun. So I look forward to doing that again this year.
This actually leads a perfect segue into our final question with you guys, which is what do you think Slack's legacy is?
I think continuing what it was based on was, you know, 4 strong women or young girls at the time who had an idea of what they wanted to do and nobody was going to tell them no, and just kind of keep that legacy going. We have a lot of interesting, strong women who come from all different backgrounds, and that's part of what I love about Slack. And I see that continuing as each generation comes through.
Well, I personally wish that I was a member out at Slack.
I know. We definitely want to join.
Part of why Slack and your mission is so fascinating to me is because it's so completely different than anything I've known as a rower my entire rowing career. And I'm really listening to you all talking the whole time. I'm thinking, of course, like I have a to-do list, you know, 18 feet long and all sorts of pipe dreams. But adding to my list of pipe dreams is how can I bring just like a nugget of what you do at Slack to the clubs that I row with to help not just this year and the team that I'm rowing with today, but to build out a community and a philosophy that then transitions from crew to crew, class to class, generation to generation. It's just really motivational to me.
We really appreciate you sharing with us everything you know and love about Slack.
It's been so lovely to meet all of you. I really hope to meet you face to face at a regatta one of these days.
Great. Okay. Nice to meet you.
Thanks, Rachel.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Thanks for the opportunity.
See ya.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye, guys.
To see photos of Slack and get links to the people, clubs, and events mentioned in this episode, check out the show notes on our website.
Steady State Podcast is sponsored in part by RowSource, providing creative design and digital marketing services for clubs, organizations, and regattas. Get the help you need at rowsource.com. Hey, Tara, I think some listeners might not know that Steady State is more than a podcast.
Yes, we should definitely tell them about Friday mornings when we get together for coffee chat. We talk about rowing, racing, technique, and deep dive into things like inclusion and leadership.
So we hope you'll join us Friday mornings at EDM West 11 East live on Instagram. Grab your favorite mug and be a part of the conversation.
And sometimes we all need buddies to help us get through long workouts on the erg. So we lead Steady State Sundays once a month at 6:45 a.m. West, 9:45 a.m. East. Join us on the third Sunday of the month until March.
When folks sign up for this free 60-minute virtual erg workout, we provide cues and insights to keep them motivated along the way. Register at steadystatenetwork.com/steadystatesunday.
Join us for our very first book club event on March 24th. We'll delve into questions about lessons in chemistry, like just how tall was Calvin? Why did Elizabeth and Calvin row a pair instead of a double? How long into the pregnancy could Elizabeth erg?
This event will be one day before we interview author Bonnie Garmus for Steady State Podcast. So bring your questions for Bonnie, and we'll be sure to pass them along. You can register at steadystatenetwork.com/bookclub.
This episode was written, produced, hosted, and edited by me, Tara Morgan.
And me, Rachel Friedman. Tara provides additional audio engineering and is our sponsor coordinator.
Rachel manages our website, social media, and e-newsletter. Our theme music is by Jonas Hipper.
Find us on Instagram and Facebook at Steady State Network. You can also find Tara at Seize the Ore and Rachel at RowSource.
Coming up next on Steady State Podcast, the third episode in our special series on heart attacks and emergency preparedness, we talk with Peter Kerman, owner of Burnham Boat Slings, and his wife, Karen Reynolds. When Peter's not in the shop or out rowing, he's probably manning a Burnham booth at a regatta. That's where we met him, at Head of the Charles in 2022, just a month after he had a widowmaker heart attack. Peter and Karen, a successful national team and master's rower in her own right, are a testament to teamwork as they navigated Peter's emergency and the rehabilitation afterwards. Catch new episodes of Steady State Podcast every other weekend, anywhere you get podcasts. In two, way enough. That's one, two.